Cross. Not sure about.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 117 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. I'm Ian Porter de Leon.
And I'm Mark Farley.
Welcome, Mark. Where are you right now, Mark?
Hey, I'm in Bristol, England. Beautiful Bristol.
Beautiful. You know, I was seeing the advertisements. I think there's retargeting ads in my Chrome browser. Welcome to Bristol, England. Yeah. And it's sunny pictures of nice, warm, sweeping landscapes, and everyone's walking around in their shorts and flip-flops. Is that what's going on in Bristol right now?
Not exactly.
February?
People are wearing winter clothing, although it's not that cold, and they're getting pelted with rain.
Are you staying dry?
I am staying dry, yeah. You know, and I'm staying somewhat safe, riding around in a car that other people are driving the wrong way. Bristol's a town of one-way streets, and you can't get there from here. So you look at the navigation device, and it like zigzags all over the place, and like you're going one block. But you have to drive eight blocks to get one block. That's what we love
about
Bristol.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's better than the way they used to do it, because that was just like everyone would just drive two ways down a one-way road, and you just kind of honk. I was like terrified that. When I drove like the countryside of Wales and England and Scotland, and people would just be driving down these one little lane narrow roads, and they just go honk honk honk, and you know, hope that nobody was coming around at 60 miles an hour. Of course, that would be what, like 80 kilometers an hour. I can't do the conversion.
Oh man, I don't know what's the exchange rate for kilometers right now.
Are you using euros over there?
I'm using plastic. I came with no paper money, right? I flew over on a jet and I had no money.
See,
and I'm just doing the plastic.
Oh, that's great. You know, see, that just avoids all that confusion. If everyone just takes some digital currency, then you could use your iPhone or something and not have to worry about it. As long as you don't have to reactivate your phone while having to use your phone. I don't know if you've ever run.
Well, I have run into the problem where I had my phone stolen, and to turn it off, they sent me a dual-factor authentication thing to my phone.
That's great.
But that's old stuff. We talked about
We've sent a push to your phone. Can you click accept in order to reactivate your phone?
I don't know, but something weird happened. I think my phone keeps clicking every now and then. I think it's got a virus, and it's trying to take pictures of me.
Yeah, I think that's like stalkerware.
I think
that's
I've got stalkerware on my phone. Yeah, time to get a new
phone. Or just the Facebook app.
Yeah, it could just be Facebook or Instagram. That was the thing, man. I was looking at Instagram earlier, and all of a sudden, my phone just starts going haywire. So what's up with you, Porter de Leon?
What's up with me? Well, let's see. I'll get into me. Let's see. We've got a great show lined up for today.
Oh, we do.
Straight into the banter. Oh, skip.
You must be having a bad week.
Skip the lineup. For those of you waiting to know what the show's about, we've got actually a really great stuff. 150... planes are grounded via Delta. Shocker. That's following the United Airlines debacle that just happened recently.
That happened to Delta about 6 months ago, too, right?
Yeah. The Rubin. High availability. Two words I got for you, Delta. High availability. All right. Oracle effectively doubles license fees to run its stuff in AWS. That's a dark horse cloud Ellison versus Bezos story. Cisco snaps up AppDynamics for $3.7 billion
before
its IPO. And I'm sure that the employees are really excited about that. Oracle lays off more than...
Holy cow, 3.7, yeah. That's a big number.
I know, that is a big... and then Oracle lays off more than 1,000 employees. So yeah, we've got some fun topics. Plus we've got a hot or not today, which I know everyone's going to love out there.
This is good. A throwback hot or not.
Yeah.
Hey, and we got two Oracle stories. Funny that should happen.
That is, man. Oracle's like, you know, charging more money and laying off workers. That's a great duo right there.
Yeah,
like
they are. That is good.
We'll have to dig into that.
That's financial success right there.
That is right there. That's going to look good on a balance sheet. So as far as me, I'm. This is funny because this is actually my second podcast today. I was actually having a wonderful chat with Madura, who is the VP of Product over at Platform 9, my favorite open source startup here in Silicon Valley. And so that was super fun. So I'm doubling up today, second podcast. And I'm happy to be chatting with you, Mark. And things are going crazy. I couldn't be happier. I'm having a blast doing the whole, you know, marketing thing. I'm in charge of content. You know what? Do you know what content is, Mark?
Oh, do I know what content is? Is that like come out of a tandoori oven?
We're creating content right now.
Hey, now.
This is good. This is
but
good
it's not
content.
Searchable content.
It's dynamic, though. It's very dynamic content.
Yeah, so you should just do podcasts all day long, man. It says you're the content
that's,
guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm. I have to generate content, and I'm now the head of content. So I've got to just churn this stuff out.
You should record podcasts, host podcasts while you're writing data sheets and stuff. Although mm-hmm. data sheets
and tweeting
really
about the podcast.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Let's get into this stuff. It's Ginchy. Which one are we gonna start with?
So yeah, let's do the Oracle back to back. So which one do you want to start with? It doubles license fees or lays off workers?
Let's see. What's good news or bad news? They're both bad news, so let's call the laying off employees good news because those people don't have to work at Oracle anymore.
There you go. They're free. They're free. Ellison free right there.
Larry free.
Oh, yeah.
Too
so
bad. We shouldn't say that because, you know, if you just lost your job, it's unfortunate and it's a drag.
Yeah. And it's never fun. And a lot of people, you know, count on this stuff and they get the rug pulled out from under them. And I've been a part of it. I've dodged a couple bullets. I've actually literally joined another company. And 2 weeks into my, you know, joining a new company, I got a text message from my friend saying, hey, we just all got pulled in the conference room and the whole company's closing.
Really?
And so, yeah. Yeah, so it's rough. So yeah, I definitely.
It is sad when it happens. I mean, even at a place like Oracle, you know, because people's families depend on those incomes and all of that. And
yeah, you know, but hey, you gotta make Wall Street happy.
You gotta make I guess if you're Larry, you're Wall Street happy, and if you're Mark Hurd, you need to figure out how to cut businesses and lay people off so you can get a bigger bonus, just like you did at HP.
Oh, man. I know somebody personally, actually. He was a president of a company. I will not mention the company or the person, but he was just talking about how excited he was, about how they figured out how to do this layoff riot so that all the execs could get their bonuses, and he was just crowing about it. And I was just
are
like,
you kidding?
I know, yeah. And he was just proud of it. And he's like, all their bonuses, they were getting all their bonuses, but they were going to lay off a bunch of people. And their bonuses probably amounted to keeping at least 100 of those jobs that they laid off. But they wanted to get it right so that they could cut costs, hit their numbers, and get their bonus. So slight misalignment of incentives, I just have to say.
Yeah, that's unethical stuff. You know, if you think that laying people off so you can get your bonus and you know, possibly ruining someone else's life is okay, you're an asshole.
Yeah.
Okay, Oracle and Larry and Mark Hurd. Mark Hurd, if you're listening to this, you are a big asshole.
Tell me how you really feel, Mark.
Yeah, I really feel that way. I mean, you know, Mark Hurd, he, you know, burned the furniture, as they say, at HP and, you know, cut businesses and cut jobs and got big bonuses there. And then he joins Oracle, which had, you know, acquired Sun, and they were going to try to make a big deal out of that business. And apparently Hurd couldn't make that work. And I wonder if Hurd is one of the guys that got laid off. Right. And my guess is, of course, he didn't get laid off. And of course, he's getting a big bonus. Asshole. And you know what is this stuff? You know, these few guys that are kind of incompetent, and they're serially incompetent, and somebody like Mark Hurd running that business, it's proven to be incompetent, but he's the right person's buddy. He's Larry Ellison's buddy, and so he gets to like do it again. Where's he going to do it next? Right? Is IBM going to hire him? Well, I guess Larry isn't there. I hope that Mark Hurd doesn't have any more friends in this business where he can go and screw it up and lay off a lot of people just because he needs to make a bonus. There, that's how I feel about it.
Excellent. Well done, Mark.
Yeah, hey, thanks. Hey, can we get some applause for that?
Yes. Hey.
Yeah. Hey, so now that you know where I'm at on this, what do you think, Yadin?
I would definitely argue that point, and maybe a slightly less passionate with fewer colorful metaphors than you. But I would have to say yes. Anyone coming from a perspective of reducing the headcount of a company when you could actually save jobs by say like reducing your ridiculously bloated executive salary or those salaries of like, you know, the 100 other people who are her buddies, you know, up at the top. I would definitely do that because some of the worst examples I've seen are I've been at companies where the leadership will come to town, they'll fly into San Francisco and we'll have a happy hour. that cost more than, you know, one of my direct reports was asking for a raise, and that raise got denied, but the happy hours continued. And it just, it was hard to continue to participate in that kind of toxic environment. And that's the same kind of environment you're talking about, where people just saying, you know what, I'm done, I'm set. Yeah. I'm in a leadership position. I've got my fat bonus. I really actually don't care about the business or the employees anymore, as long as I make sure I hit my metrics and get my payday. And it's unfortunate because, you know, companies are run by humans and humans are fallible, and people with power, what do they want? And they want more power.
So what do you think
that's
going on?
That's not going to change anytime soon.
So what do you think's going on there? I mean, it's not surprising that they couldn't really make a successful hardware business work out. I mean, they were trying to come in with, you know, high end products and old technology that didn't continue to get developed much anymore. And I'm sure people there will say, well, yeah, we were continuing to work on it. You know, and Oracle still develops processors and that kind of stuff. They're involved in that. I need to find out if, you know, a couple of my friends there got the axe. I wouldn't be surprised if they did. You know, but are they running into trouble? Is Microsoft starting to spank them hard? I mean, SAP deal, is that all going south? SAP is doing more with Microsoft now than they are with Oracle. Do you know what's going on there, Yadin?
You know, I don't know the exact details, but I do know that hardware is a really tough business. And as you know, it's really, really hard. And so a lot of companies are feeling like, you know what, we need to move higher up the stack. And I think that's what Oracle's doing with its Dark Horse Cloud, and coming after AWS and Bezos, and I guess that's why it's effectively doubling its license fees to run its stuff on AWS.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So we need to talk about that. Oracle doubling license fees so they can run on Amazon.
And Larry Ellison is promising that Oracle's cloud will run faster and cheaper. Just so, let that marinate, everybody.
Yeah. So what's the gist of this here? So they increased the license fee on Amazon. Is that so they can drive people to Oracle's cloud? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, because, you know, well, Larry keeps saying he's after Bezos, and he's going to be like, and you know, and Mark Benioff and everyone else who has a cloud. So it was a big shift in that they used to, you know, they're now treating AWS, a virtual CPU or a vCPU, is now treated as a full core. If hyperthreading is not enabled, so users running two AWS, you know, vCPUs, you know, therefore need to pay full freight for both. And so this is a big licensing structure where, okay, now it's going to cost you twice as much to run Oracle stuff up in the AWS cloud, because I think they really want to disincentivize people from doing that, because they're like, no, don't use AWS. You want to come over to Oracle, when, in fact, you know, I think cloud infrastructure is just going to be commoditized at a certain point. AWS has already won that battle. Why doesn't Oracle just move high up the stack and make itself even work even better in AWS, so that they'll use Oracle for pure cloud or hybrid cloud or on-prem, you know, and they're just getting paid. They're just printing money instead of trying to win this, you know, win this infrastructure as a service war that Ellison is trying to wage against Bezos.
Yeah, I think they should just build a big data center on Lanai and put all of the unsold Oracle hardware over there, and you know, somehow generate power from, you know, turbines in the ocean, so they can run a big data center in Lanai, Larry. That's what I
think. Yeah, or just wheel it all into eBay and just sell it all.
Yeah.
Sell it all.
Yeah. I wonder what they could sell it for. I wonder if Oracle started to dump, you know, well, where I'm getting back to hardware, and this is about license fees on AWS. You know, they're always good at this. They always find ways to extract more money from customers, and they do it in ways that are difficult to understand, right? So you look at the press release doing it, it's all about various CPUs and all this, and I wouldn't say it's as intractable as a lot of their licensing agreements, but my guess is the details of this are really complicated, so, you know, nobody can understand it, and two people would interpret it differently every time, right? That's probably what's going on here, because that's kind of how they do licensing. You know, confusion reigns, we'll just send you the bill.
And then they just threaten you with an audit. We're going to audit your environment and increase your bill by 10x.
And of course, you know, part of me having to take the side on it is because Nigel's not with us. And if Nigel was here, he would just be shooting flaming arrows as far as he could into Oracle's cold and nasty heart.
Well, he'll just tell you you should run everything on Docker.
Well, that, yeah, I guess he was, yeah, but. Will Oracle ever run a Docker? That's the question for Nigel.
That's great. Nigel, that's
if Nigel ever comes back, we should tell him that the news story is Oracle announces, you know, Oracle running on Docker. Let's see what he says.
Yeah. So this is where I always like talk to people out in, you know, in podcast land. Nigel, if you're listening to this podcast, you might want to, you know, hit us up on our Slack channel.
Nigel.
And let us know your opinion. Or tweet us on Twitter. I think you know what our Twitter handle is, Mr. Nigel Putin.
All right.
Excellent. Have we beat Larry Ellison to death yet?
Yeah, I think we beat Larry Ellison and Mark Hurd to death.
Fantastic. Yeah. I always like that. So I want to get your take on this because I know this is really interesting from two perspectives, but I want to get your high-level industry perspective first on Cisco. Just bought AppDynamics for $3.7 billion. And the interesting part is right before it IPOs, and I want to get to that part first, but what's your take on just the acquisition alone?
Surprised the heck out of me. I haven't been really following AppDynamics that closely, but I have this to say. David Scott, who was the CEO, of course, at 3PAR, and got bought out in an amazing bidding war between Hewlett-Packard and Dell, you know, several years ago. He became, you know, a Valley guy, and he, you know, was associated with companies, and he went on the board of AppDynamics. And when you're a guy like David and you've made a lot of money, you go on the board of AppDynamics, you invest money in the company like AppDynamics. And so now that they, you know, they sold for a huge amount of money, David apparently is a money magnet. Whatever he does just like turns into gold. He's got the Midas touch. And I got to say, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. I really like David. And, you know, it's kind of, I'm not sure why all this wealth is pouring down on him. And he must have done something in a previous life somewhere that was really rotten, because it's really reversing itself here. And David, I know you're not listening to this, but if you are, congratulations, by the way, on knowing how to pick him. I want to take this guy to the track. I want to take this guy to the casino. I want to take this guy, you know, in when I go talk to my investment advisor, you know, because obviously.
That's perfect. You should do it. You should do just a ride cast where you just go everywhere and it gives you advice on what to do in every facet of your life. That'll be the next ride cast.
I know, because he knows something I don't. That's quite obvious. And, you know, so anyway, this deal, right? You know, going out in an acquisition for this much money right before an IPO, that tells me one thing. There was a bidding war, and they played it perfectly. This just looks like the happiest day on earth for everybody at AppDynamics. I'm so impressed.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons was, you know, they were testing the IPO waters just so they could get a larger valuation so that they have more negotiating leverage during the purchase. But these purchase structures are notoriously disadvantageous for individual common stockholders, i.e. employees. In many cases, you get pennies on the dollar if there's a acquisition versus an IPO where everyone's, if you have one share, that's one price.
But if you're talking about $3.7 billion, you know, that's real money to a lot of people.
It is real money, but not nearly as much real money as if you did a $3.7 billion IPO, because then that money gets spread out a lot more evenly.
Which probably wasn't going to happen, right? I mean, can you imagine the negotiations of this? I mean, you've got to figure there's a bidding war going on while they're talking to their bankers about the IPO and they're trying to like figure out the price and all this stuff. It just had to be nuts. The guys running AppDynamics must have just been going crazy. Probably didn't sleep for a week. You know,
you can't sleep because you're trying to imagine how much, what you're going to do with all that money.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the details of the negotiations get really crazy, and, you know, phone calls are coming in and going out, and, you know, there's a lot of back and forth. I think it's a real joyous time, and congratulations to everybody at AppDynamics. I probably said that before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that actually is. So those who got an exit from AppDynamics, that's going to be an awesome day. And just for those who don't know, actually, AppDynamics is a business application monitoring, providing visibility intelligence, you know, from the network to the application, just in case anyone didn't know what AppDynamics does. So it's basically monitoring intelligence, and Cisco just bought it for $3.7 billion.
Who else do you think might have been bidding on it? I mean, you know, I doubt that Dell EMC was there. I doubt that HP was there.
Oh, man.
Maybe Oracle.
I, Maze, I was just about to say that. I was like, I bet Oracle was like, no, we shall get AppDynamics and we shall make people pay twice as much for their monitoring services in AWS's cloud.
Yeah, we just laid off 1,000 people and raised our prices on our licensing so we can buy AppDynamics. And then, you know, I doubt that. I doubt that was Oracle. But somebody must have been there. It seems improbable that it would have been Cisco versus an IPO.
Yeah, but that maybe that was it. They were just threatening. No, we're going to go IPO. Oh, you want to pay this? No, we can get more in IPO. That would provide them enough leverage because they can. IPO is a real option, and they could get an exit, and they can get liquidity, and with still remaining autonomous. And you know, if Cisco didn't bid up enough, then they could say nope, sorry. Yeah. I think that's enough. I think that's enough to have negotiated leverage without any other bidders being involved. So, the public market was the other bidder.
The public market may have been the other bidder, and I'd say it's good to sell. When you strike the terms of the sale, you get it. The public market, it's still risky. You know, you could go out for an IPO, and you could have, like, for instance, a president of the country do something, you know, completely crazy and just wreck the stock market. I mean, it's not like that would happen, but it could happen.
Shoot, Mark, you were talking crazy, man. Nothing like that could ever happen, right?
Yeah, the president would never do anything. Right now. The president would never do anything that would wreck the stock market. I know, no I'm way, just man. Stupid.
No way. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we covered the Cisco story. There's one other thing that's interesting in the news. 150 flights were grounded at Delta Airlines for yet again another outage. Were you up in the sky when this happened?
But I was flying a competitive airline, not Delta.
Oh, a competitive airline. Well, yeah. they all have their day. Yours will be down too.
I hope mine's not down. I hope it's down. I hope it's not, you know, like this weekend because I want to get home.
Yeah, you don't need it this weekend. Well, I just hope you can get back in the country, Mark. So just make sure you say lots of really good things.
I mean, when the systems are down, do the planes just have to fly around? I mean, you know, we can't land anywhere. We got to fly.
I think if they can get communication with the tower, I think it's usually the booking system. So it's just their management system to make sure that they've, you know, they're tracking people coming in and off, and that's it. Because the tower can get the airlines or the planes up and down. That's independent of, you know, like say Delta's system independently. You can fly the plane anywhere you want. Communicate with the tower, queue yourself up, fly out, get your destination, you know, have your path all set. The problem is, well, I want to make sure that the right people are on the right flights and, you know, and they're paying for the flights and I'm not giving seats away for free and you're in the right seat, all that stuff. All that stuff is what, you know, is what goes down for individual airline.
And you've got pretzels instead of peanuts on the plane.
Exactly.
So who's buying
blankets? How many people have pillows?
So do you think a bunch of birds flew into the data center and took it out?
It was a data center bird strike.
Bird strike, right in the data center. Yes. And a bunch of they had to land, just flew in
they
the
had
windows,
to land in the Hudson River. The data center's now in the Hudson.
Yeah, my Symmetrics has a bunch of geese in it.
Oh, man. Oh, my God. And this is on the heels of United having the same problem.
I managed to get out. There you go.
As long as you get on the plane, you're set. Yeah. You're set. You can get out.
And speaking of geese, they had Goose Island IPA on the United flight.
Ooh, man. That's a good IPA,
nice
Goose
IPA.
Island.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. And having that on the flight, the best I've ever seen on a flight so far is like Sam Adams. You know, which is a good one if you're at the casino. Say you're at the craps table, one of my favorites for South Lake Tahoe. You get yourself a Sam Adams, and that'll get you, you know, through the night.
Yeah. Yeah, you can put on a cowboy hat and kind of talk really low.
but Goose IPA, it's nice. It's a little step up.
The best beer I ever had on a flight was a Surly.
A Surly?
A Surly IPA. It's a Minneapolis brewery.
Oh, wow.
And I can't remember which one they had. Yeah, Surly's terrific. But, yeah, I couldn't believe I hit it on an airplane, so I had to have some. Anyway,
there was a day where it's probably a day where you could bring your own on the plane many decades ago. Just bring a case of scotch on the plane with you.
You know, you kind of wonder about that, right? I mean, why can't you bring your own on the plane? I mean...
Well, now it could be some explosive liquid, you know, so, you know, TSA and security, they just wouldn't
Yeah, you should be able to, like, buy it at duty-free, though. you know, and just
yeah. Well, yeah. No, you can bring your own booze on, you know, if you buy it at the duty free. But that's so it's so expensive.
Have you ever done that? Yeah.
The Costco. No, I haven't, but that sounds like something I should do.
I thought you would say no, but some very good friends of mine have.
Yes, but I've heard of people who have done that before. Yeah.
Nigel.
Not me. Nigel, if you listen to this, please send us your cocktail recipes for in-flight entertainment.
There we go. All right. Nice. You've got a great voice for that.
Well, if you look online, actually, you see, like, go to YouTube, you know, and for our company, and you actually, half of the ones that we just put out are all my voice. Actually, all of the ones that we just put out are all my voice.
And what company is that again?
That's it. Well, I'm so glad you said something, man. We're here at Druva Inc. Go to youtube.com/Druva and download the latest videos.
And listen to Yadin Porro de Leon, mi compadre.
Yeah, exactly. So I've got a nice ransomware one. What else do I got there? I got the VMware data protection in the cloud. For your listening pleasure, for those of you, you know, looking to waste some time on YouTube, go ahead and download those and learn a little more.
And listen to the sweet dulcet tones of Yadin Porro.
Exactly. Yeah. I won't bust out my radio voice. That was just a little bit of the Nigel Poulton one there.
Okay,
yeah.
Nigel.
Yeah.
What's next? Hot or not?
Keeping it short and sweet today, and actually delivering on that promise, which you know hasn't always been the case. So, hot or not, Mark? Since this is going to hopefully be 100%, because we could tie this up. There's only two people on the show today, so hot or not? Everyone out there in podcast land, cassettes are back and booming. Whoa! Drop the pressures. That's right, audio cassettes.
Ooh.
Yeah. Currently it's called Music's Weird Cassette Tape Revival. And people are actually putting money into this. It's the reason why it's actually happening is people are putting money behind, you know, bands are coming on board and releasing their music on cassette. And what was it? The U.S. artists and labels saw a 140% increase in tape sales over the previous year. And I think we were talking about this before the show started, but I'm like, 140%, if you're only selling like 100 cassettes, then 140%, that's like only another like 140 more cassettes. So that's 240. So 240 cassettes are now being sold. Okay, I don't actually have the real numbers, everyone.
Right?
That's just a guess. But I imagine that it's not a large number, but 140% increase is a significant delta. So if that trend continues, we might actually see a bit of a comeback for the audio cassette. Not if I had one in my hand right now, I would have no idea where to play it, though. That's a problem.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Do you have something? Could you play a cassette if you had one in your hand right now?
I could. No, I couldn't right now because I'm traveling. But if I was at home, I could. You know, if I had a cassette right now, what I could do with it is like I could take the tape out of the cassette and I could wrap it around like one of my legs or something and, you know, walk down to the bar and order a beer.
Or there you go.
You know, or just wrap it around my head and go as like the Invisible Man. Right. I think this is, you know, as much as I love cassettes and knowing that these bands are, I think this is a non-story. So I think it's not hot. I think you hit the nail on the head. They don't sell cassettes anymore. So 140% boost. Somebody is trying to make news over something. This is a distraction. Right. I mean, you know, what they should be talking about is vinyl on platters and DJs, you know, and all that stuff instead of like you can't do DJ stuff with a cassette. You know, are cassettes cool? I don't think so. I mean, you know, you kind of like throw them across the room and stuff, right?
you gotta stick that pencil inside one side and spin around to like rewind them if you don't have like a cassette player or whatever, like that rewinding thing.
In case you forgot, do they shed oxide all over the heads that need to be cleaned? And you know they get caught up in the mechanism, and you got to like pull them out of the tape player. I mean, cassettes in general, it's a you know, I've still got a lot of them. I don't play them except during the holidays. I have got a bunch of Christmas cassettes. I'm just done with them. I'm through with cassettes. I don't have any emotional attachment to that media. I think they suck. I'm glad they're done. I would rather download music than listen to cassettes. How's that?
All right, so you are solidly not hot, Mark.
I'm solidly not hot, but you could be hot. I mean, that's fine. Yeah.
I take it from this way. You know, it's funny. I have an anecdote, actually, about the whole cassette thing. Somebody broke into my car many years ago. This is when I was one of my 20-somethings. Before there were millennials, I was a Gen X or whatever you would call that. And someone broke in... broken my car. And you know what? They didn't steal anything except for the two cassette mixtapes that were in my car. They were just absolutely worthless to them. But that's what they stole out of my car, cassettes. So I have these memories of pain and suffering when it comes to
all that time putting those mixtapes together.
Yeah, the classic mixtape. You know, that's a lost art, you know?
Yes, it is. It's
lost art, the mixtape.
Yes.
Most people sucked at it, and so it wasn't really an art, I don't think. You know, maybe only a few people were good at it. But hey, if you were good at mixtapes,
do you remember?
Send us a tweet.
Do you remember what 80s bands you had on your mixtapes?
Oh, yeah, man. There was like Run DMC, there was NWA, and on the other side, there was like, you know, it was like Nigel Poult, who's Pearl Jam. What else we have on there? Quite a few.
Oh,
you
know,
Smashing
Jam.
Pumpkins, all that stuff. Man. But that was it. That was a pretty good mixtape. You got into the realm of CDs, so it was great. You took your CD and then you put it all into a mixtape. There's something ironic about that.
Yeah, there is. But was this like at the beginning of grunge or in the middle of grunge or something?
Yeah, this was the beginning of grunge. And this was before, like, you know, DVD burners, you know, or Napster were really big. And you really had to dumb everything down to a tape mixtape. And it was just, even back then, you know, even at the time, I was really, really upset about the fact I had to spend all that flipping time getting all this music onto a mixtape. I did not enjoy it. Even I was thankful. Yes, okay, I have a mechanism for sharing music with everyone. Okay, copyright free. But I did not enjoy the experience. But you know what I did enjoy?
Using Dolby. You really enjoyed using Dolby.
Using doubly. Using Dolby. Yeah.
Dolby noise reduction. That really like got me off.
That was great. So I'm definitely putting this. I'm with you, Mark. I'm putting this in the not hot category. But wow. I have to say though, I still hold a warm place in my heart. The revival is definitely not hot. But I'm gonna go back and do the warm place in my heart cassette thing. I think that you. Well, you know, you said you don't have any more warmth in it, but I still do. When I was a kid, I recorded, and you may do this too, I recorded a bunch of shows with my friends, and I think I would actually call that the original podcasting. I was podcasting when I was like 7, 8 years old, and recording shows onto cassettes and then sharing them with friends. But of course, you couldn't upload them to SoundCloud. But apparently, I was realizing this a few weeks ago. I'm like, oh my God, I was a podcaster like at 7 years old until I was like 10 or 11 or something like that. And so I still have some of these actually on, I transferred them to digital, and now they're on like a cloud somewhere. But yeah, no, I can.
Do you play them for your kids?
No, I don't. But when a couple of my friends are like, you know,
wait till they become teenagers.
Yeah. But they do. You know, it's funny because they'll go on iTunes and they'll listen to my podcast. They'll listen to like the StockNet podcast. And they'll giggle and like, you know, and my 2-year-old will be like, oh, that's daddy. Yeah. Daddy, you sound funny. You sound weird. Because I talk different on the podcast.
Yeah, don't let them listen to this one because it's NSFA.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. We don't. Yeah, I don't play this for the wee children. But just you know, the other one's safe. The other one's safe. We don't have the letter E next to the.
Daddy, why is that awful man swearing so much, Nigel Bolton?
Nigel Bolton. All right. Well, I think that's the show for this week. Mark, anything else before we wrap up?
Nigel Bolton.